Ho capito il palle, però c'è un altro.
From CZN, where she, yeah, this one.
Yeah. Oh. Remember, it's not a
Ladies and gentlemen, once more, good morning. Yeah, the department has done it. They have the extension cord and they are connecting. So perhaps in the meantime, it would be useful for us to do some bit of introductions. I know sometimes it becomes a little tiring, but it's important because sometimes we have new people coming in, those we didn't have before, and so on. So to update one another, we need to introduce ourselves. Can I at this moment call on the honorable members of parliament to introduce themselves? Let me start from... No, let me not introduce her. She will introduce herself. Let me start on my left.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Lalina Mtembe. I'm a member of this committee and represent the Northern Cape. Thank you very much.
Tumsan Kamete from KwaZulu-Natal.
Morning, everyone. Dixon Mkhono from Eastern Cape.
Morning, Israel Lekolwane from Northwest. Yes.
Good morning, I'm Wesley Douglas from the Western Cape.
Joel Subia, Limpopo Province, Chairperson. Acting Chairperson, sorry for that. At this moment, I think it's necessary to invite Chief Director Sibanda to introduce his team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Sungai Sibanda from the DTI. Babs Kuljit, DTI.
Good morning. My name is Ipotayani, DTI. And I am Ibrahim Mohammed, called Ibi, from the DTI. Thank you.
Yeah, we can just continue along the same vein. We introduce ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Theo Akili. I'm from the Office of the Chief Special Advisor, GEPTA.
Colleague Beja, Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Edwin Conroy, I'm a researcher to the Chief Office of the NCOP.
Can we go to the corner there? We need to know everyone.
Dr. Petty representing the casino industry. Good with me, PMG.
And Lee from the BTI Parliamentary Office.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll remember that the last meeting of this committee, we indicated...
Hey, we don't know that lady.
Which one? Thank you, Honorable Corner. I didn't see that there is someone I skipped. Why I want to skip Sir Roger of all the people? My sincere apologies. Yeah, I was indicating that last time only we met as a committee with the department, we had a range of issues which were raised by the different provinces in terms of our new protection bill. And then at the end of that meeting, we requested the department to consolidate all those into one solid document. Can we invite the department to brief us on the latest? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, the department went back and consolidated its responses emanating from the provincial negotiating mandate. And what we will be presenting today are basically those responses. Chairperson, you will note that there are issues that cut across provinces, similar issues that were raised by provinces. So in certain instances, we have not really repeated issues. And if then there are provinces that are not mentioned by name, it's not because the issues are not covered. The issues have been covered in our responses. So we will then attempt to go through the responses and see how we proceed. Thank you very much. The scope of the presentation, really, as I've already indicated, is to provide an overview of the submissions from the provinces and what the department's responses to those submissions or negotiating mandates. And obviously to then present this to the committee for its consideration. Chairperson, I will not go through the policy objectives of the bill. We have done that previously, and I'm sure the honourable members of the committee are well aware what the policy underpinnings of the bill are. So we'll not go through that. I'll therefore go straight to the issues that have been raised by provinces. The first issue raised by Gauteng is with regards to the provision of redress for consumers when it comes to insurance matters. Chair, during our public consultations on the bill, we consulted the National Treasury, and they were of the view that this bill should exclude financial sector legislation because the financial sector legislation does deal adequately with consumer protection issues, and as such, this bill really does not delve into financial sector issues. But those are left to sector-specific legislation. Chairperson, we also reached an agreement with the National Treasury that they will review their legislation within 2 years of the promulgation of this bill to see whether their legislation does deal with matters of consumer protection sufficiently. So we have that understanding, and National Treasury has made that undertaking, but we therefore don't deal with insurance matters in this bill. However, suffice to say that consumers that probably are not happy regarding insurance matters have access to various ombuds in that particular sector. There is also a fires ombuds in the sector to listen to consumer complaints and to adjudicate on such matters.
The second issue is that consumer rights should be displayed in all retail and wholesale outlets. This is a very important issue that goes into consumer education and awareness raising. And we believe that, whereas it's not something really that can go into legislation, but we believe that industries should be encouraged to actually have codes of conduct that then may be displayed in their places of business. This will really assist consumers to know what their rights are, what is it that they are entitled to in those particular sectors. So we don't believe that this is something that should go into the legislation, but it's something that can be done by way of implementing the legislation to encourage industry players to display these rights or codes of conduct in their places of business. The next issue is that the Commission should be tasked with the responsibility of empowering consumers on the content of the bill. Certainly, Chair, a very important issue really around this bill is the whole question of education. We've stressed this issue previously that without consumer education, this bill really will not work. Therefore, it is important that the National Consumer Commission be tasked with the responsibility of educating consumers, empowering consumers, going on roadshows, having awareness campaigns all over the country, in conjunction with provincial departments, of course. So we do accept this fact, and it's something that the department has already begun planning around to say once this bill has been passed, then the next stage really will be to undertake roadshows educating consumers on the content of the bill as well as on their rights. The next issue is that contracts between consumers and retailers should be simplified and standardized. Again, we do take the point. However, we think that this point is already covered in the bill. For instance, Section 22 deals with the plain language requirement. In other words, all contracts must be written in a plain and easy-to-understand language. However, we also recognize that Sections 48 to 52 deal with unfair contract terms. In other words, consumers would have recourse where there are certain unfair contract terms at the point of contracting. Moreover, Section 50 also provides that the minister will prescribe categories of contracts that need to be in writing, and therefore the Commission will also endeavor to standardize and simplify contracts in the identified categories. In other words, what Section 50 says is that through regulations, the minister will be able to identify the types of contracts that need to be in writing, and therefore there is an opportunity to ensure that those types of contracts are simplified and they are also standardized. So we do take the point, Chairperson, and we believe that this issue is adequately covered in the bill. More inspectors should be appointed to look into the quality of perishable goods and unfair treatment. Again, the bill does provide for the appointment of inspectors and places certain responsibilities and roles on those inspectors, and a particular role for these inspectors really will be to go around to check to see whether businesses do comply with the legislation, and obviously the issue of quality is an important one. The issue of unfair treatment of consumers is an important one, and so inspectors will be deployed or will be employed and to go around and to carry out a monitoring function to ensure that business does comply with the legislation. Um,
The next issue is that contracts between consumers and retailers should be in the preferred language of the consumer. Chair, again, this issue is covered perhaps in the plain language requirement of the bill, as already mentioned. We believe that the approach taken by the by the department or in the as reflected in the bill, that contract should be in plain language, really is something that business can live with. However, if we go a step further to require that each and every consumer should request or should require contracts in their own language, we think that probably might cause a burden on business. However, as the issue is currently reflected in the bill, we think that it's workable. Contracts should be in a simple and understandable plain language. Then there is also a call for consumers to be, for those consumers that have suffered financial loss or have suffered financial harm, to be reimbursed. Chair, Section 74 of the bill provides for consent orders, which indeed may include reimbursement or any other form of remedy. The bill also provides for instances where consumers may be refunded for defective products or where those particular products may be replaced. The consumer tribunal is also empowered to make certain orders, and these orders may include the fact that a particular consumer needs to be refunded. So again, Chairperson, the issue is covered in the bill, and we believe that the powers are there for both the National Consumer Commission and the National Consumer Tribunal to make sure that consumers are have remedies. There should be more power to investigate consumer complaints against banks and insurance companies. Chair, as already alluded to, the financial sector legislation has been exempted from the provisions of this bill, with the exception of banks. So banks are still covered by this legislation, and therefore the National Consumer Commission will have power to investigate matters that arise in the banking sector with regards to consumer protection issues. Other than that, the consumer has got power to investigate any other sector that is not covered or that is not exempted from the provisions of the bill. So yes, the bill does confer very wide and very broad powers on the National Consumer Commission to undertake investigation in those sectors that have not been exempted from the provisions of the bill. The bill should provide speedy resolution regarding faulty products from suppliers. This issue is covered in sections 53 to 59 of the bill, and these sections deal with speedy resolution of complaints with specific reference to faulty products. The sections also provide for consumer rights to demand quality service. Honorable Chairperson, you remember that one of the important cornerstones of this bill is the entrenchment of consumer rights. And therefore, in those chapters that deal with consumer rights, one of the issues that we stress is the consumer's right to demand quality service, quality products, the consumer's right to safe and quality products, as well as issues of warranties on new and repaired products. So these matters are taken seriously in the bill, and they are dealt with adequately. Consumers must know their rights, and these rights must be enforced by both the National Consumer Commission as well as the National Consumer Tribunal.
So yes, we agree that there is a need really for a speedy resolution of matters that concern faulty products, and these are adequately covered in section 53 to 59 of the BMC. There is then a call for detailed labeling of genetically modified organisms, food, and other foodstuffs to enable consumers to make informed decisions. So while the department really, in principle, has no objection to the reinstatement of this clause for purposes of giving consumers the right to choose, we do, however, recognize that we don't have the capacity to pronounce on the safety of GMOs. Mm-hmm. And previously we did state that this matter was adequately or was intensely covered and debated when the GMO Act was being processed in Parliament. However, what we believe in is that consumers should have a right to choose, and therefore, without necessarily pronouncing on whether GMOs are safe or not, we believe that consumers should have the right to know whether a particular product is a GMO, and therefore have the right to choose whether to consume that product or not. And then there is also a recognition that foodstuffs that are already dealt with in the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act and its related regulations should be exempted. Chair, the issue of exempting sectors and exempting particular products comes up a lot. And whereas the bill really does provide for an exemption mechanism, we think that exempting sectors upfront might pose a problem. Obviously, we want to avoid a situation of duplication where possible. However, there needs to be a process that particular sectors will have to follow before they can be exempted from the provisions of this bill. So therefore, sectors necessarily have to prove that their sector-specific legislation deals with consumer protection matters up to the standard or even in a standard that is much higher than that provided for in the national in the consumer protection bill. And so there is a process that's provided for in the bill, and we don't think that we should be exempting sectors and legislations in a haphazard or in an unstructured manner. So we think that perhaps this bill should be allowed to be processed, it should be passed into law. And once that happens, then sectors, departments, regulators can then approach the minister with a request to be exempted. And then the department will then, or the minister will then look into issues of whether those particular sectors do meet the requirement for exemption. So at this moment in time, with the exception perhaps of the financial sector legislation, which we have satisfied ourselves that it does deal with consumer protection matters adequately, we do not think that we should be entertaining exemptions at this stage of the bill. The threshold provided for in the bill should be based on the supplier's annual assets or turnover value. Chair, the current thresholds are based on the value of the transaction, and we think that perhaps that is fair, because firstly, the bill covers any type of a consumer. irrespective of the size of turnover of the respondent or the person that the consumer is dealing with. Secondly, we believe that if we use annual turnovers, this probably may exclude certain big businesses, and that might result in unintended consequences. So therefore, we believe that the current approach of using transaction values probably is, at this moment in time, in our view, adequate and does deal with the issue at hand. And really, the issue at hand is that we want to ensure that we protect small businesses. And so therefore, perhaps the best way of dealing with it is to look at the value of the transaction rather than looking at the annual turnovers of businesses. Small businesses will not have access to the defenses available in relation to strict liability. Chair, again, the issue of strict liability is a very important one, which the department believes really probably is one of the cornerstones of the legislation, together with the rights that are entrenched in the bill. So we do not believe that small and medium-sized enterprises should be exempted, really, when it comes to strict liability. Anybody that puts goods and services into the market should ensure that those goods are safe and that they don't cause harm to consumers, regardless of the size of the business concerned. Probably retailers who obviously source products from manufacturers or from overseas-based suppliers, it is their duty to ensure that those products are safe, those products are of good quality, and we don't really see it fit to exempt any type of business based on its size from this requirement of ensuring safe products, quality products, and products that don't harm consumers. And we also note that retailers actually will not be required to test products themselves, but they just have to secure guarantees from manufacturers that the products that they have sold are safe, are of good quality, and so forth. Chair, there is also a call for franchise agreements to be excluded from the 20-day cancellation period. And we take the point that this is actually a valid point. Perhaps when it comes to cancellation, a franchisee really probably will not be in a similar position to an ordinary consumer. However, we also know that the issue of franchise agreements is already excluded from the definition of consumer agreement. So the definition of consumer agreement as provided for in section 14 excludes franchise agreements, and so the cancellation period relating to consumer agreements does not include franchise. The cancellation clause relating to consumer agreements does not include franchise agreements. The issue of financial implications of the bill. This is probably one issue that was raised not only by Gauteng but also the Northwest Province, and that is to say, what would be the financial implications of this bill, and what is it that the department can do to assist provinces in administering or in implementing this bill or in curbing the financial burdens that this bill probably would impose on provinces. Honourable Chairperson, we do accept the fact that obviously there will be financial implications for provinces in implementing this bill. However, we have also stressed the fact that consumer protection is an area of concurrent jurisdiction, that therefore that provinces do have a mandate to enforce consumer protection legislation, and that this therefore should be provided for in the provincial budgeting processes, and that the national department probably cannot therefore impose on provinces what probably needs to be done, but that this issue should be incorporated in the provincial budgeting processes. Chairperson, is also probably worthy to note that the bill will probably, or rather the institutions that are created in the bill, namely the National Consumer Commission, will only come into existence a year after the act, after this bill has been promulgated into an act, and the provisions of the bill, the compliance provisions of the bill, will then come into effect 6 months after that, and so therefore that provides provinces with adequate time really to plan around this bill, to budget for the implementation of the bill. So we think that there is ample time for provinces to take this bill into account in their budgeting processes. There is a concern that shop owners keep consumers' bank cards as well as ID documents. Chair, this practice is probably captured in Section 40 of the bill. It's probably an unfair practice or an unconscionable conduct. However, we also do recognize the fact that the National Credit Act does deal with this issue adequately. The issue of shop owners or credit providers keeping consumers' banking cards as well as details. This is illegal in terms of the National Credit Act. It's also unconscionable or unfair conduct in terms of the National Consumer Protection Bill. So we agree that this conduct should not be tolerated, and therefore the Act does deal with this particular issue. And if consumers do experience such treatment, they do have recourse in the form of the National Credit Regulator, and in future in the form of the National Consumer Commission. Goods advertised should include taxes, and perhaps this matter relates to bait marketing, where adverts don't disclose adequately, or rather don't disclose everything relating to a particular transaction. Chair, we think that this issue, however, is dealt with by the introduction of the VAT system, and which provides that no supplier is entitled to advertise goods that exclude tax. In other words, all advertised products should be VAT inclusive. Section 30 also provides that advertised goods should not result in consumers being misled or deceived on the availability of those particular products at the advertised price. So the price that consumers see must be the price at which they should be able to buy those particular products. So in other words, suppliers may not advertise one price, and then when the consumer gets to the till, the price is different. That certainly cannot be the case, and the issue is covered in the bill. There is also a call that prices of a company or a particular supplier should be the same no matter the town in which the company or the store operates from. And secondly, that electricity increases must differ in accordance with the size of the town or the area affected. Chair, with respect to the first issue of the same company charging different prices in different locations, we think that this probably is dealt with in terms of the discrimination clauses of the bill. If a consumer feels that they are being unfairly discriminated, then obviously they have recourse in terms of the act, and then it's up to the regulator to ensure that, or to prove really that indeed there is discrimination taking place. The issue around electricity prices, Chair, we think that this is probably covered by way of the Electricity Regulation Act, and probably is the domain of the National Energy Regulator of South Africa that is tasked with regulating electricity prices, or if it's in a particular municipal area, then it's the domain of the municipalities. However, consumers do have a right in terms of the bill to fair prices. The bill does cover the issue of fair prices. So therefore, if a consumer feels that the price that is being charged is unfair, then they can challenge that particular price. However, where there are sector-specific regulators who regulate prices, we think that those complaints then should be directed to the sector-specific regulators. Interest charged on items bought or sold must be reasonable. Chair, the bill does not deal with issues of interest, but this is dealt with in terms of the National Credit Act again, and is the domain of the National Credit Regulator. So if consumers feel that they are being charged unfair levels of interest rates, then they can approach the National Credit Regulator. Suppliers should be excluded from indirect consequential losses in terms of Section 48. Chair, we believe that Section 48 has to be retained as a standard practice by suppliers, which is to force consumers to contract out of their rights. In terms of the bill, suppliers may not really contract out of liability. However, we do recognize that they can still contract out, but that the contracting out may not be on terms that are unfair or unreasonable or unjust to the consumer. So whereas they may really not contract out of liability, they may still contract out of certain terms for as long as those terms are not unfair, unjust, or unreasonable to the consumer. The next issue relates to cooperation with consumer protection groups, especially in rural provinces. The bill emphasizes the issue of cooperation. It tasks the National Consumer Commission with the responsibility of supporting various activities that are undertaken by consumer protection groups, as well as cooperating or giving support really to those groups, and the commission is also empowered or is also entrusted with the responsibility of educating consumers, empowering consumers on the content of this. Again, this issue, Honourable Chair, is an important one, and really goes into the heart of implementation. This bill, again, can only be implemented successfully when there is cooperation between the national government and provincial governments, as well as various consumer protection groups. The next issue raised is that businesses constantly close shop and move to other areas, resulting in losses for consumers. Perhaps this issue, Chair, is dealt with in Section 80, dealing with business names, where it will be a requirement for businesses when they register their names to disclose information that will assist consumers to identify who they are actually dealing with. That section requires suppliers to disclose their identity, to disclose their addresses, physical addresses, to disclose various information that will assist the consumer to know where this particular supplier or business is located. And obviously when they move, that will also require them to change details, and consumers will therefore be able to know where that particular business is relocated to. The next issue relates to unsolicited goods, and the concern is that there is airtime that gets transferred into consumer cell phones without their consent. This issue is covered in Section 21, dealing with unsolicited goods, that a consumer really has got certain rights when it comes to goods that have been delivered to the consumer unsolicited. The bill further states that the consumer will not be liable to any charge if the goods were unsolicited, and also not liable for the charge of the delivery of such goods. So we accept the fact that this is a problem and that the bill does deal with this particular issue. Chair, I will not repeat issues probably being raised by certain provinces that have already been covered. For instance, the holding of IDs and bank cards. The next issue is the cost to business of complying with the bill. Chair, any piece of legislation perhaps comes with compliance costs. However, what needs probably to be acknowledged is the fact that in most instances where there is legislation passed, there is obviously a particular regulatory gap, or there is a particular market failure that the legislation is trying to close. And therefore, whereas there will be compliance costs to business, we believe that the benefit to consumers or to society will far outweigh any cost related. related to the implementation of legislation. So similarly with this bill, we accept the fact that, yes, there will be compliance costs to business. However, the benefits flowing to consumers, the benefits flowing to suppliers themselves, the benefits flowing to society as a whole will far outweigh the cost of complying with the legislation. The next concern is that the definition of prospective consumer and potential prospective customer as well as potential customer as well as individual probably needs to be clarified. Chair, this is one of the issues that we'll probably be proposing amendments to this bill on. We will obviously seek advice from our colleagues from the Office of the State Law Advisors on how to proceed on this particular matter. However, we do think probably that there is a need to clarify these particular terms that have been used interchangeably in the bill without any definition. There is a concern around forum shopping, that the institutions created in the bill or those that are existing will allow for forum shopping in the sense that consumers will have various forums to approach for assistance, and that these forums are recognized and they are independent, or rather they are dependent on each other for the resolution of the complaint at various stages. And that it's only when a complaint has not been resolved by one level or by one forum that it will be referred to the other, and therefore that the forums do complement each other. Chair, we accept that perhaps when consumers are confronted with too many institutions or forums, they may not really know at a particular point in time where to go. However, we think that those particular forums will play a crucial role in educating consumers where to go at various stages, and that these forums will be interdependent. And they will work closely with each other. As I indicated, the issue of cooperation is very critical to the implementation of this bill. The national office, the provincial offices, the various ombudsmen, the various industry-specific alternate dispute resolution agents should all be working together in a cooperative manner to assist consumers with their complaints. So whilst we do accept that, yes, there are many forums that consumers will be required to approach, we think that these forums are actually interdependent and that consumers will be properly guided by those forums where to go, at what stage, and so forth and so on. There is also a call that consumer protection bodies should be established at municipal level to assist with easy access for consumers. Chair, we don't have any objections to this particular issue. However, as a department, we may not again impose anything on local government or on provincial government. But we think that it's something that obviously local government can do, and it's actually encouraged that they do actually establish a consumer protection bodies at that particular level, and that will assist with ease of access for consumers. So we don't have any objection to this suggestion or proposal. However, as a department, we may not really, pronounce or impose it on local government. We can probably work with local government on this issue. Mm. there is also a concern that the definition of direct marketing is too wide. This chair is done so purposely so that the direct marketing provisions cover as many situations as possible. So we think that the provision should be left as wide as possible, so that if I feel that somebody that has approached me at home or at the office or wherever is involving involved in direct marketing, then I should be able to take out that matter, or I should be able to have certain rights with regards to that particular matter. So we think that the definition of direct marketing is fine. There is a proposal that that section 17 dealing with advanced booking should include circumstances beyond the control of the consumer. Chair, this section is only limited to refunds in the circumstances of death or hospitalization, and for any other reason, the supplier is entitled to charge a portion in cancellation fees. What this says is that if I have cancelled an advance booking, the supplier may not charge me cancellation fees with respect to a death or a hospitalization event. However, in any other instance, the supplier may charge me a cancellation fee. And we think that this is reasonable because it's very difficult to prove any other instance than death or hospitalization. It's easy to prove death, it's easy to prove hospitalization, but I suppose it would be very difficult for suppliers to prove that I had to cancel this advance booking because of some other circumstance. So we think that in any other circumstances, the supplier should be entitled to charge a cancellation fee. However, when it comes to death or hospitalization, then they may not charge a cancellation fee. There is also a concern that sections 56 and 57 probably are not aligned, in the sense that there is a 6-month warranty on new goods covered in section 56, whereas there is a 3-month warranty on new parts fitted as repairs, covered in section 57, and this therefore is seen as an anomaly. We don't think so, Chair, because there is a difference between what is covered in section 56 and what is covered in section 57. Section 56 covers new goods, whereas 57 relates to repairs on old products. So therefore, the warranties on those may not necessarily be the same. So we think that is okay, Chair. There is also a concern that there appears to be no provision permitting a supplier to respond to allegations before a compliance notice is issued, and that is section 100 of the bill. Chair, I think it will be unfair, obviously, to suppliers to just be served with compliance notices without a right to reply. So we think that the normal processes, due process, will be followed. Suppliers will be given an opportunity to respond, And only after that, then will a compliance notice be issued after taking into account or after hearing the side of the supplier's story. Chair, perhaps the concern is that this is not explicitly stated in the PA. And perhaps is implied, but we think that it's part and parcel of due process. And if need be, we will see probably how we can improve on that section if it's not clear enough. There is also a recognition that the bill does not deal with issues of business licenses as dealt with by the Business Act. Chair, yes, we accept that, and the reason is that the bill only deals with consumer protection matters and not licensing issues. Licensing matters will be dealt with elsewhere in relevant legislation. There is various pieces of legislation that deal with licensing in specific sectors. So this bill does not intend to deal with licensing matters. With regard to the transitional provisions of the bill, we also note that the bill provides that the Commission may continue to investigate contraventions of repealed laws up to 3 years after the promulgation of the bill, and that some of these issues need further discussions with provinces for more clarity. So the issue of the continued operation of repealed laws is covered in the transitional provisions of the bill, and we are saying that the Commission may still investigate contravention of repealed laws up to 3 years after the promulgation of the bill. We have touched on the issue of GMO labeling. The department really does not have a principal objection to the issue, but we again cannot pronounce on the safety or non-safety of GMO. There is a proposal that casinos be excluded from the application of the bill. This is a matter of exemption. As already stated, we don't think that it's prudent to be exempting sectors, to be exempting particular industries at this moment in time. However, there is an exemption process provided for in the bill. So if the gambling industry believes that they need to be exempted from this bill, at the opportune time, they will be able to approach the minister or the National Gambling Board as the regulatory authority in that industry will be able to approach the minister and state its case for exemption. The cooling off periods in relation to franchise agreements is unacceptable. Chair, we think that the cooling off periods as provided for in section 7.2 are valid, and that this is in line really with international best practice when it comes to franchise agreements. So whereas obviously there will probably be a concern probably from franchise goals, we think that this bill is intended to entrench the rights, is intended to extend protection to franchisees And so we think that the cooling off periods proposed in the bill are valid, unless, of course, we are convinced otherwise. Chair, we have talked about the issue of plain language. We also have covered the issue of safe and quality products. However, there is a call that government must ensure that all foreign products are subjected to the SABS norms and standards. Chairperson, the Section 55 2D does provide for goods to comply with any applicable standard under the Standards Act or any other public regulation. So there is that particular recognition that products need to comply with whatever standards apply to that product, whether under the Standards Act or any other public regulation. And then there is a proposal that the cooling off period be extended beyond 10 days to return goods of poor quality, and that's with respect to sections 20 and 56. Chair, the issue of return of goods of poor quality is covered adequately, and consumers are indeed allowed to return goods within 6 months after delivery if those goods are of poor quality. Other issues raised relate to access to information, and we note that there is a promotion of Access to Information Act that deals with the with access to information, and all institutions are actually subjected to that particular act. So if a consumer feels that they need access to particular information, they can actually do so in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Inspectors' ability to commence work immediately. As indicated, the bill provides for the appointment of inspectors, and they will be charged with certain responsibilities. And yes, as soon as the institutions are set up, inspectors will be appointed to carry out monitoring and enforcement work. Local authorities to exercise powers of the National Consumer Commission. We have touched on this issue. We do encourage local government to actually get involved in consumer protection matters. However, we may not dictate this on them or to them. The regional office to be closer to the people, particularly rural communities. Again, Chair, we agree. We also take note that there are various provincial offices of consumer protection, and that these probably need to be located next to where a lot of people are. Public entities and their representatives should not be exempted. Chair, the bill, we did mention the fact that this bill binds the state. In other words, the state as a supplier is not exempted from the bill. However, the bill also does provide for an exemption mechanism, and this really will be the prerogative of the minister to exempt whomever he feels probably needs to be exempted from the provision of the bill. And that exemption should be subject to public hearing. Chair, we think that it's a fair proposal, and that where possible, really, there should be public hearings before exemptions are granted. public entities would be prohibited from refusing or failing to provide services. This again is dealt with in Section 8, where consumers may not be unfairly excluded from accessing any services on the grounds of unfair discrimination, as contained in the Constitution, as well as the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. So we take note that, yes, consumers may not be unfairly treated, unfairly discriminated, or refuse access to certain services. And during our briefing, we did actually provide examples of where or when consumers get refused access to particular services. And in terms of this bill, that will be illegal or will not be allowed. Then there is a proposal that there should be that debt collectors should be regulated in terms of when they should contact consumers. Chair, this bill unfortunately does not deal with debt collectors' issues. Debt collectors are regulated in terms of the Debt Collectors Act. However, this bill only deals with unwanted direct marketing, and it does indicate when, provide consumers with certain rights with respect to direct marketing. Consumers have a right to refuse to be contacted at particular times, and also to be listed on a register that direct marketers should not be in a position to contact them. We've dealt with the issue of preloaded airtime, and that this is unsolicited product. Pyramids and related schemes. The bill should exclude legitimate schemes such as stock sales and the like. Chair, we think that legitimate schemes will be recognized as legitimate, and therefore there is no need to exclude such schemes in the scope of the bill. Options: the reserve price should cover full settlement of outstanding debt. Bondholders should be excluded from securing below market value bids. Chair, we think that these probably are issues that are too detailed and therefore may sit well in under regulations as opposed to specifying such issues in the primary legislation. So we think that this issue really belongs in regulation. Chairperson, that covers really the main issues raised by provinces. However, there are other additional issues, such as prepaid certificates, credits, and vouchers. Here there is a proposal that the proposed 5-year validity period for certificates, cards, as well as vouchers, is too long and impractical. We as a department, we agree that perhaps keeping a voucher for 5 years is probably rather stretching it, and that perhaps we should reduce the 5 years to 3 years, because I'm not sure that there is anybody that can keep a voucher and only remember after 5 years to redeem it. So perhaps it's really unwise to prolong that period. So we will be making recommendations to the committee to reduce that period from 5 years to 3 years. The commission should be tasked with the responsibility of empowering consumers on the content of this bill. Chair, we have tasked on this matter. It's a very important one. Cabinet did raise the matter, and we are working and planning around how to raise awareness, how to educate consumers and the like. Thank you very much, Chair. We are done.
Thank you very much, Chief Director and the team. So the ball is in our court. Perhaps let me start by requesting honorable members to indicate if there might be some issues which were raised by the provinces before, which in these responses by the department have not been referred to, before we come to questions, discussions, and the rest of the team. Are there issues we think were raised by the provinces but have not been responded to in the presentation given? Are we satisfied? So, Honorable Gamede.
Just one issue, Honorable Chair. I think on page 12, from Wazulu Natal. I'm not sure whether we were on the same par with the department on the issue of warranty. But the issue that was sharply raised was, give an example of a car radiator. There is a warranty. The very same radiator that is new. And if you have a car and you buy a new radiator, now the warranty is on the radiator. It's not on the fixing. So the warranty on the new car on a radiator is 6 months, and the warranty on the new radiator on a car is 3 months. I think that was the issue. That is why I'm saying that was raised by the province, that, you know, the warranty, because it is the part. It is not the service. The parts are the same. I think that's the issue.
Are you okay?
The other issue, which I'm sure concerns all members, this issue about canceling advanced bookings, I think it mostly refers to flights. Now, the issue also is the request to the consumer. For instance, if the flight is late, there's no request in the consumer. Whereas, if the consumer is late, there's a penalty to the consumer. So you cannot reconcile the two.
Thank you. Over to the department. Okay, they are still caucusing, so let's give them a minute.
Chair, we take the point from Honorable Gamete that perhaps the department did not quite understand what the issue really was with regards to warranties. However, we probably would want to think some more on this particular issue, because it's really not the intention of the bill to contradict itself. You know? If there are two new products, they all should be subject to the same time limit warranty. So if there are contradictions there, obviously it's unintended. But we will probably have a look at it more carefully with that understanding. The issue of cancelled booking. I think we approach this issue from the viewpoint that where a consumer has made an advance booking, and then they cancel that booking, what is it that the consumer is entitled to? What is it that the supplier is entitled to? And we are saying that in instances of hospitalization and death, the consumer may not be charged any cancellation fee. However, in any other instance, remember that the supplier has got an expectation that this consumer will show up, and therefore they have made available the service or capacity to accommodate the consumer. And so when the consumer cancels, therefore there is probably some, in inverted commas, cost or loss to the supplier. Although we know that in practice they actually always have people to take up that space. However, we think that probably as a matter of principle, it's very difficult to prove any other instance, and therefore the supplier should then charge a cancellation fee. However, where a consumer, or rather where a flight is late, it's not provided for in the bill. What we provide for are instances where consumers probably are then bumped off, are bumped off flight. You have made a booking, you have showed up, however, the airline cannot accommodate you. In that particular instance, we are saying consumers should be compensated for that. So that issue is covered. However, the issue of late flights is not, I suppose that would really be difficult to cater for such instances, in legislation. Where consumers are bumped off, definitely there should be some form of interest to the consumer. So we think that probably that, in our view, does deal with the matter. The issue on warranties, we'll look at it more carefully, John.
Some more on omissions, Honourable Coro?
No, thank you, sir. Just to reinforce the KwaZulu-Natal position, so that it is not seen as KwaZulu-Natal issue around this warranty issue. I'm glad that the department is considering the matter, because we are in a competitive environment here. My order. We are in a competitive environment here. You will get businesses that would want to fit a part, but this may also encourage them to make use of pirate parts, because they know that by fitting that part, the lifespan in terms of warranty is short. So there is no obligation upon them to go for genuine parts. I'm just trying to reinforce the position by KwaZulu-Natal, that you are not here talking about how bad the workmanship was or anything like that. But when it comes to a part, at least the customer must be given a good service by fitting in a genuine part, not a reconstructed or parried part or something like that.
The expert one is real. Thank you very much. Are there some more issues who feel have been left out? Honorable Ntembe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm grateful for the issue of the inspectors going to be there. But I would like to know who is going to monitor the inspectors to see that they really fulfill their duty. And unfortunately, I have to relate back to the labor issue in relation to inspectors. We have this situation where things are very bad and people are underpaid. They're supposed to be labor inspectors, but these things are still there. So that's why I want to know. I'm just comparing something. Who is going to monitor these inspectors to see that they fulfill their duty? Thank you very much.
Yeah, Honorable Ntembe is two steps ahead. No problem. Just keep it there. We'll come to such. You will be the first when we come. It seems the omissions are out. In other words, they are no more. Perhaps before we get to the questions, discussions, and comments, I would be comfortable if we invite the state law advisor to say something, if there is any, and thereafter we invite the parliamentary legal advisor to follow suit. Then we can get into the swimming stream. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. At this stage, I don't really have any comment as far as the issues raised that the department will have to report to us in respect of with regard to warranties. So I don't have any comment at this stage as far as that is concerned, but it is a matter that can be addressed on a policy level. I do, however, have another matter that I wanted to raise in respect of the Business Act, the proposed repeal of the Business Act. Because we're proposing the repeal of the Business Act. Now, the Business Act is still the Business Act has been assigned. That particular is an assignment to provinces, as far as that is concerned. So, although we're repealing the Act, the effect wouldn't be that we would be taking the administration away from provinces, but there could be some issues regarding legal certainty. So as far as that is concerned, maybe we should look at deleting the proposed repeal of the Business Act as such, because the Act, the bill doesn't speak to licensing, as already mentioned in the presentation. That's all I wanted to say at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Thank you, Chair. And my apologies for coming in and out. I am triple booked. I'll have to leave you in a short while after my presentation as well, because I have to go and have to send a PC on foreign assets. I guess a few issues that maybe have confirmed some of the position taken by the department. On section 74, I'm using the matrix on provincial submission. So the submission that dream this kind of consumer self suffered financial loss. And the department suggests that section 74 provides for consent orders, and subsection 2 of that section provides that it says may, the consent orders may include an award of damages.
Sorry, we're a little lost. Which document are you referring to?
Page 2 of the matrix.
Ah. Not this one. Let's see.
It's a huge
thing. Okay. Sorry for that. Continue.
Subsection 2 of 74 says that it says may, those consent orders may include an award of damages. So it wouldn't be in every situation that the consent order will automatically include an award of damages. So maybe we want to encourage our consumers to pursue their claims in the civil court if they feel that they want to use that avenue.
Okay.
Okay, I had noted the insurance part. I have to agree again with Mr. Fungai, because in the initial briefing, the DTI had mentioned that they had consulted with Treasury. I also sat in the PC on finance, and I know that they did bring before Parliament a number of amendments to the insurance sector legislation. They amended the Long-Term Insurance Act and the Short-Term Insurance Act to provide for more consumer protection, and I'm sure they wouldn't be averse to the suggestion that in 2 years' time they should also look into putting more amendments into those pieces of legislation. On page 10, regarding section 61, that small businesses may suffer unintended consequences, this relates to what my colleague from the DTI had explained in length in the previous meeting regarding strict liability. Case law agreed. There's a case, I think it's Watson versus Pharmacare. In that case, Judge Howe agreed that strict liability, they cannot pronounce on strict liability, but they will leave it to Parliament to legislate, legislate on strict liability. So there's nothing wrong with an act of Parliament providing for strict liability, because the court declined to make a ruling and said that it's up to the legislature, specifically Parliament, to address the issue of strict liability. So I'm just confirming that as well. The following page, page 11, that section 69, 17, and 116, that the institutional structure creates opportunities for extensive delays, forum shopping, simplification, and confusion. I don't think that would also hold water, because case law again agrees that, and even some commentators on constitutional law and law of statutory interpretation agree that a legislator or a piece of legislation can have provisions that say that a person must exhaust internal remedies first before approaching the court. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't oust the jurisdiction of the court. The following page 12, and the general, there's a concern that consumer protection, or a suggestion that consumer protection bodies should be established at municipalities to enable easy access. I just want to add on to the recommendation that has been put forward by the department. In Schedule 4 of the Constitution, consumer protection is a matter of concurrent jurisdiction between provincial and national legislature. Then that schedule has Part A and Part B. Part B would relate to matters which the Constitution assigns to local municipalities to regulate or to legislate. But in this situation, because consumer protection is a concurrent between provincial and national, it is in the exclusive domain of, or rather, it is in the concurrent domain of national and provincial, that if it was to be found to be necessary or viable to have this administered at local level, it would entail using Section 156 of the Constitution to assign that power to the municipalities. But that also has its own complication, because we would have to make sure that those municipalities that are assigned that power are capacitated, they are supported. Because if, whether it's the provincial or national government that assigns that power to the municipalities, they'll have to come to an agreement. And that agreement must include capacitating, giving resources to the municipality to carry on the mandate. Otherwise, it would be an unfunded mandate. But I don't think that is necessary, because I think the provincial institutions, the institutions set up in the provinces, are working. But of course, at a later stage, if it is found to be better suited at municipalities, it would have to use the procedure provided for in Section 156 of the Constitution. Then the businesses act. I think he has already alluded to that. I shared the same sentiment. And I think in the matrix, that's just about it. This one other point in the document that was prepared out by our research office. Especially regard to unconscionable conduct, because I had noticed that some submissions put forward where concerned that there is no clear definition of what is unconscionable conduct. But a recent article that reported a recent case that came up before the Supreme Court of Appeal had James Brown versus Danon Benze and the Department of Land Affairs. Judge Van Heerden in that case said that it is important, he referred to the relative bargaining positions between labor tenants and the landlords. Although the matter was about rental arrangements, it has an impact on the bill that is before us, because it touches on consumer protection. So the judge in his decision said that it is important to appreciate that when labor tenants conclude contracts with farm owners, they are not assisted by lawyers. They represent a vulnerable section of the society, are almost always impecunious, unsophisticated, and unschooled. One should not lose sight of the power imbalance in the relationship between the farm owner and the labor tenant, and the treason that only free men and women can meaningfully negotiate. So, I mean, I guess that just addresses those concerns that have been raised, that have been put forward. I don't know if there's any other ones. Well, just on recent consumer agreement, I think there was a point as well on this regarding on the presentation by Sunan regarding recent consumer agreement. And the bill did address the fact that the minister may pass regulations to classify certain or to require certain agreements to be written. For example, in the alien, they say that it is not a requirement. In contract law, it is not a requirement for an agreement to be written. But it is also up to the legislature to require certain agreements to be written for specific reasons, especially when it has to do with consumer protection. One example is the Alienation of Land Act, which requires alienations of land to be in writing and signed by the parties or by their agents acting on written authority. Section 13 of the Housing Consumers Protection Measures Act of 1998 also requires home builders to ensure that agreements concluded with the housing consumer for the construction or the sale of a home shall be in writing and signed by the parties, setting out all terms, including financial duties of the housing consumer. So these statutes are used as a mechanism for consumer protection, even though it is a principle of our contract law that a contract doesn't need to be in writing. A piece of legislation can be brought before Parliament requiring that a contract be put in writing where it involves methods of protecting consumers. I think that's all I can say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It seems the state law advisor has some small bone to chew after the presentation by the parliamentary legal advisor. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, come.
Thank you, Chief. Just on the question of what is unconscionable conduct, I think in the definition clause 1, unconscionable is defined. So that would bring some light to the issue. It says that it, when it's used with reference to any conduct, means having a character contemplated in Section 40, or otherwise unethical or improper to a degree that would shock the conscience of a reasonable person. So there is some explanation as to what it means, and I'm sure that that particular definition would throw some light on Section 40, or Clause 40 of the bill as it is now. I'm not sure that suffice for the committee.
Thank you very much. I take it that the comments and some explanations were meant for the department to take note of, and the members will only deal with such issues if ever they come to them later through the department. Do I make sense? Thank you very much. Now is the turn of the MPs to ask questions, comments. Honorable Douglas. Oh, you are right, right. Honorable Ntembe, Honorable Gamede. Okay, for the time being, in that order, thank you.
Yeah, I just think, I actually don't have a very long question. I just wanted to refer back to the Western Cape submission and agree with the state law advisor in terms of the section, because it was raised by our province around the repeal of the Business Act. And I just wanted to get just the confirmation that that's really being looked at the moment, and that I have to give feedback to the Western Cape, obviously, on this matter, because it's got direct bearing on some operations and services in the Western Cape. So otherwise, I'm very happy that most of our other issues have been dealt with and brought up. And obviously, in terms of the impact on GMO labeling and those other issues, it's been answered, so it's fine. I maybe have just one question, and that is that actually I saw while we were raising issues, and that's under Gauteng submissions of page 6, which is the exemptions under foodstuffs being exempted from the bill. I want to agree with you on that position, because I have a problem with the current legislation and stands. I just listened to a program 2 days ago where, for instance, chicken is being injected with saline solution. 60% of that chicken on the market at the moment have a 60% saline solution concentration. Those are things that is being known by the consumer. Also, things like different kinds of meat being added to sausage, for instance. You think it's beef and it's actually ostrich to make up the weight and all that kind of stuff. So I think that there's a lot of things happening in the market. It's not protecting the consumer, and if the Foodstuffs Committee and the Disinfectant Act doesn't deal with it, or if the current bodies don't deal with it, I think that they should come under this bill.
Honorable Gamede.
Thanks. On page 4, I'm not from Gauteng, but on page 4, Gauteng is part of, you know, KwaZulu-Natal. Most of the people from Gauteng come from KwaZulu-Natal. Contracts between consumers and retailers should be simplified and standardized. Section 22, in plain language. The question is, what about brains? People that apply, that have to sign contracts. How do we protect them in this bill? You know, in your section, section 50, also there at the top, in the presentation it was said, section 3C provides for the means that the minister will, but the act says the minister may. So which is which? That it will or prescribe categories of contracts, but if you go to the act, it says may. And when are these contracts to be categorized? The other question is, if you look at the bill, the purpose of the bill, or the, even the title of the bill, is Consumer Protection Bill. So in the main, it would say it wants to protect the consumer. But then if you go to that section 50 on the contracts between consumers and retailers, you get an explanation and a sentence that says the bill provides that contract should be in simple language and that this is sufficient to turn not a regulatory burden on business. Now the question is the objection, that is page, still on page 4, is the objective still to protect the consumer? I will give the explanation on the an example on how you explained when you discuss the business names from the Western Cape presentation. So the issue is, which one do you weigh, a burden on business or the protection of the consumer on the on this contract? Then I'm sure I'll go to KwaZulu-Natal. On the issue that was said about local government involvement on page 10 on the presentation, I'm trying to find out, because the department is either directly or indirectly located in local government. The department has got units such as CEDA and so on. So why is it now that you can say the department cannot be, you know, because of concurrent jurisdiction, that it will then be the problem? Can't we use the same approach when we have these feeders and all these other units, that will make it a point that it is in local government, more especially in rural areas? Or that one of business licensing has been dealt with, still on page 4. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gamede.
Page 15. On other issues, that is from Mpumalanga. Regional offices to be closer to the people, particularly rural communities. You know, I come from the rural community. And then the department says it is agreed. But then the department doesn't tell us how does it plan to do this. On the other hand, it says it cannot go to the municipalities on the left hand. On the right hand, it says no, it will go to regional offices. It agrees that it must be in the rural area. But how is it going to do it?
Thank you, Honorable Gamede. Mine are just two comments. One is a question, the other one is a comment. But perhaps before that, let me say, I'm happy that the issues raised by my province have been covered. So I don't have anything to still pursue. Now, when Mr. Sibanda presented, he indicated that the Treasury will look at the possibility of revising their legislation 2 years after the implementation of this bill, when it becomes a law and act and so on, to check as to whether there needs for them to close some gaps in terms of the application of this law. Now, my question is, the fact that the question of the revising of the legislation will have practically been made necessary by observing the effectiveness of the implementation of this bill when it becomes a law. In the interim, what will be happening to the consumers? Are we saying they will have to stay with those gaps until that period elapses and then the revision comes into effect? Secondly, this is just an observation. You know, when we were talking about the third meeting from now, not the last one, there was an issue which I raised concerning, you know, when you go to the shops, you find there is sometimes written, the price you see is the price you pay. Not all the shops, some shops do have that. Usually, when one goes there, sometimes you find there's an article you want, it is, I just give an example, it's 8 rand, but when you go to the teller, you find it is 950, something like that. But it's not only that. On Tuesday, I went to Discom, don't tell them. Don't tell them. I was looking for, what again, this perfumed petroleum jelly for my boy. He likes it too much. On the shell, it was written 13.99. Now, when I went to this person of money, the cashier, it was 11.99. Now, which then means, had I not taken that chance, according to the money I had, I would have said, I don't have enough. Because it was indicating 13, and it was not the only one I wanted to buy. I wanted to buy some spoons, also good ones. So, on the basis of the calculation of what I had in relation to what I wanted, I would have ended up saying, I don't have enough, so it is 13, so I can't buy it. It is 11. But when I went there, it was 11.99. So, these are some of the things that perhaps might need to be looked into when we get into the details of all the rules, the regulations, and the rest of the things that will come into effect when this bill is implemented. Thank you very much. Any other? None in the meantime. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. My colleagues will assist in dealing with some of the questions. But perhaps if I can deal with the first question from the Western Cape on the Businesses Act. Chair, in our response previously, we had indicated that we will indeed seek advice on this matter. And as already alluded to by our colleague from the Office of the State Law Advisor, there might be challenges when it comes to repealing that act. So the stance that we have taken at this moment in time is that perhaps it's not wise to repeal that act. So we will, as a matter of course, be proposing to this committee not to repeal that particular act because of the reasons that have already been mentioned. The second issue relates to page 4 of the presentation, where we say that the minister, where the bill says the minister may prescribe categories, but in the presentation you say will. Chair, that's probably an error from our side. We intended to use the language that is in the bill, and that is that the minister may prescribe categories of contracts that have to be in writing. So the language in the bill is probably the correct language. We apologize for that error. Maybe I should allow my colleagues to come in here and answer some of the other questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to try to respond to the question on involvement of local authority in consumer protection. And the question was, there seemed to be contradiction on the part of the department. I there's no contradiction. I would like to respond as follows. Maybe we did not explain in the presentation, but how consumer protection is going to unfold is captured in the provisions of Section 83, which talks about cooperative exercise of concurrent jurisdiction. The bill does recognize that consumer protection is an area of concurrent jurisdiction. In fact, in terms of the Constitution, it's called national and provincial governments have shared competence, meaning that provinces can enact provincial legislation dealing with consumer protection, but they have to take norms and standards from national office. In our response, when we say that we cannot impose on municipalities, and I think maybe that is the wrong choice of words. What we anticipate is going to happen is that because consumer protection at provincial level, it is the competency of a province, it is incumbent on a province to make sure that they do set up some of these regional offices to respond to the question that regional offices be closer to the people. And I mean, this is not a new concept that is going to be introduced in provinces like the Western Cape. The Western Cape provincial government does have regional offices at almost all the points in the province. We anticipate that this will continue, but the major drive is definitely going to be the province. And in terms of the constitution, it will be inappropriate for the department to say we direct you provinces to do 1, 2, and 3. And I think that is what we are trying to explain when we say that we cannot really impose on municipalities. But provinces do have a right because every piece of land in the country belongs to a province. And a province can go down and set up offices at municipal level. So that is how we anticipate that the whole process of cooperating will unfold. It doesn't mean that the department is going to sit back and fold their arms. I mean, in Section 83, it details on how the minister is going to intervene in a form of having continued discussions with the MECs on how consumer protection should progress into even those rural areas of our country. So this issue is not necessarily neglected in the bill, and we hope that through the provisions of Section 83, some of these interventions will definitely be achieved. And I mean, when we say agreed, maybe it was late when we put together the presentation. It doesn't mean that we're going to be folding our arms and saying that we're not going to deal with that issue. 83 empowers the minister to intervene and say, at a particular rural area, there is no consumer protection. Please, province, intervene. And there are ways in which we're going to effect some of those. And I just want to also take on the price discrepancy. Honourable Chair, what happened to you was your luck. However, it's a problem. But in terms of the bill, in one of the provisions that I cannot offhand recall, we specifically say that if a price has been displayed on a product, the consumer can insist that he is going to pay that particular price. So the price that you see displayed on a particular product is the price that you're going to pay. We recommend that in one of the provisions of the bill. But yeah, we anticipate a flooding of complaints like that because people are going to really be excited with some of these rights. I mean, you would have lodged a complaint already.
No, of course.
Yeah, so we really are anticipating that through the pitting stages and also we will definitely get it right. But it's all about educating consumers so that they are aware to pick up on some of these issues. And if suppliers know that consumers are not going to leave these issues, but they're definitely going to make noise and complain, they will improve on their services. I mean, there are some big retailers who are guilty of this, like your Pick and Pay. We, at our level, at Consumer Protection Office, we still get complaints where people don't actually pay the prices that are displayed on the shelf. And I mean, Pick and Pay is one of those people who don't put prices on the items, they put it on the shelf. And in many cases, consumers complain that when you get to the till, the prices have changed. And these days, they just blame it on the fuel price. But those are the issues that we're definitely going to be taking up.
Sorry, through you, Chair, if I may just add, there's also provision that if there's two prices on a product, then the lesser price is the one that's very good.
I will do it like that.
And just to comment on your particular experience, I think where, as Ashley Professor is your good luck, where there's no prejudice to consumers, in fact, there may be a bit of an inconvenience, but I'm not sure what prejudice is to consumers if they pay their surprise at the tour. So for me, that is not a problem that probably needs to be addressed in the bill, but it's because it's just an inconvenience, not a prejudice. And you save the tour end. So that's just what I would like to say on the pricing issue.
Thank you very much. Oh, I think there is still something on our Bruntem. You remember she asked, the inspector's issue. Can you come to that?
Chair, through you, the Honourable Mr. Gameda made reference to the issue of Braille, and I think his ego was to deal with that. Now, it is indeed true, Chair, that Section 22, which is on page 27 of the bill, inasmuch as it speaks about agreements being in plain language, it does not specifically deal with the issue of Braille. However, if you have a reference here to Section 22, sub 3, it does make provision for the Commission to publish guidelines for methods of assessing whether a notice or document satisfies the plain language requirement. I think, Chair, then we can only encourage and ensure that the Commission publishes the relevant guidelines to assist those that may be physically handicapped or visibly impaired in some way or the other. And I'm not sure whether that would then satisfy the Honourable Mr. Gameda.
Yeah. Thank
you very much, Chairperson. The issue around the monitoring of inspectors, obviously, it's an important matter. However, Section 88 of the bill provides that the commissioner of the National Consumer Commission will appoint people, and those people will be designated as inspectors and will be charged with the responsibility of going out to monitor and inspect compliance with the Act. Now the question is, who is going to monitor those inspectors? Chair, I think these inspectors will be appointed and will be employees of the institution, and they will be carrying out a mandate on behalf of the institution, in as much as the department probably has entrusted us to come and do a particular job in Parliament. There are checks and balances to ensure that that particular mandate is carried out. There are performance contracts that employees are required to enter into, and obviously there are report backs. When you get back to the office, you need to indicate what is it that you did. You need to write out a report. So whereas really probably there isn't a particular monitoring mechanism, but I think there are checks and balances that are put in place for employees to ensure that they actually undertake or they deliver on their duties. So there will be employees of the institution, and they will be treated like any other employee when they are requested to do a particular job. And really, it's an issue,
And I suppose it's very difficult when you send somebody to the Western Cape and you are in Pretoria. It's very difficult to know whether they have done, you know, the job. However, other than attaching trackers on them, I'm not sure how else that really can be done. But it's really, I suppose, it's a question of having trust, you know, in your employees that they will do the job that they're supposed to be doing. Chair, the other question the question that you raised regarding the financial services legislation, what will happen in the interim? Chair, we obviously reached this agreement with National Treasury on the understanding that currently their legislation does actually deal with consumer protection issues, because it's new legislation. It's legislation that was passed after 1994, and therefore does give consumers a certain level of protection that is up to the standard of the constitution of this country. Where we have problems particularly is legislation that predates 1994 and therefore does not deal or does not treat consumers equally or does not deal with issues of consumer protection in a very satisfactory manner. So we reached this understanding with the National Treasury on that basis that their legislation currently does actually cover consumer protection. However, we felt it necessary that after a period of 2 years, perhaps it's also necessary for them to then review their legislation to make sure that it's brought up to the level of the standard of this bill, if it's not already at that particular level. So there will not be any gaps really in that respect. There could be instances where probably here and there, you know, consumers are not adequately covered. But by and large, we think that the financial sector legislation is up to the standard with the consumer protection bill.
Thank you very much. Any other issue to raise? Follow up. Okay, Honorable Gamede.
This is a follow up. Whether we say regional or local offices or whatever. But, Chair, I want us to be realistic that sometimes we pass laws that are not really easy to implement, more especially locally. For instance, this bill, and this request that they should be locally. One, we say there's a concurrent function, national and provincial. But we know for a fact that the consumers will be coming from local. 99.9%. And they'll be exerting pressure on local municipalities. Whether province then decides to open these offices in municipalities. As a result, local municipalities then are not able to do their core function, which is service delivery. And national and provincial government would have shifted everything now to local government. We've passed our own law, now we've done our thing. If you want to complain, go first there and come there, you'll be the last on the line. Now, I want to check if the department has really looked into this, you know, because it impacts intentionally or unintentionally on local government. Now, what the Structures Act and the System Act that says about municipalities, you'll find them no longer concentrating on their core function. And that is the function of the province and the national, and they're no longer there. These complaints are rushing to that office in and out. Now, how do we address that? Because that is going to affect local government.
Thank you. Over to the department.
Chair, I think the issue that we were really trying to respond to was a proposal that said local government or municipalities should be allowed to establish consumer protection bodies. And we said we don't have any objections to that. However, practically, and as my colleague has pointed out, the issue of consumer protection is a concurrent function between national government and provincial government. And practically, a provincial office will obviously be located within a particular municipal area. So now, the demarcation between local government, provincial government, and national government really has got to do with the exercise of power. But when it comes to accessing those services, the national office is based in Pretoria, which falls under the Fane Metropole, which falls under Gauteng, which is a national office. So the only difference really is who exercises powers over that office. But to a consumer, it really doesn't matter whether this office is a provincial office or it's a local government office or it's a national office. All that they want is access to a particular office. So to consumers, really, it doesn't, well, they don't even know that difference. You know. So, but we're trying to respond to the question that says, can local government establish, you know, consumer protection bodies? And we say, look, we don't have any principal objection to that. But when it comes to the practical implementation of this issue, provinces already do have offices that are located in municipal areas. The national government is there. So consumers already do have access. And there are various other consumer protection bodies, NGOs and the like. So all that consumers really want is easy access to an office. Whether that office is run by a provincial government or it's run by a local municipality, really to consumers it doesn't make a difference. Or they don't even, it doesn't matter. Whilst we hear the point, I think the issue that must be emphasized really here is perhaps national government and provincial government should be working towards ensuring that there are offices where it really matters for consumers to access. On whether who exercises powers over that office is really is probably secondary.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. Any other issue to raise? Oh, it seems there is none. Perhaps before I invite Honorable Ntembe to propose a vote of thanks, let me indicate two little things. Sorry. Specifically to both the members and the department. I have been informed by Mr. Ramrock that an invitation has been issued to the provinces to do everything in their power to make sure that by tomorrow, by Friday, let them have their final mandate, negotiating mandate in. Now, if indeed that happens, it will then mean next week, Wednesday, we will have to come together again and look at all those. With members, I think it will also come to them in a different form rather than the way I'm announcing, but it's good that they are here as well to get more about it. Secondly, I think we agree with the responses given, both written and oral, unless there might be other issues that one might not have been able to detect as we were discussing. I mean, this time on the part of members. So that if that indeed is the case, we would like to say specific things to the department and await the invite to the provinces to comply with Friday, and from there we would take it on. I think we take it that the department has done what we requested them to do. Well, here and there, it always happens. Two, three things come up, but that's not an issue. And we think that is the correct way of getting things going. But let me not say it. I will request Honorable Ntembe to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I need to say that this is a very, very good law, and I'm always on the ground, and I see unfairness and injustices. So this is really protecting the consumer. And as NCOP, we have the mandate by the Constitution to do oversight. So I will say that the NCOP also needs to do oversight on this, the members, when we go to our constituencies and assist inspectors to see if these things are happening. And we thank the department for this good law that is going to be implemented. It's going to protect the consumer, and we are also part of the consumer. And I will agree with my chairperson that this is the best thing that could happen to the consumers. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I made a slight mistake when I was making the first announcement. It will not just be negotiating mandates. We want final negotiating mandates. Does that make sense? Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. These are new words. Sometimes they become a little confusing. Not finally, but final. I see she's not happy. Anything, ma'am?
Houghton will be having public hearings next week, the whole week. So it's difficult for the committee to sit.
No, perhaps let's agree. This is what is standing in terms of the committee, the office of the people in charge of the committees. So the specific issue of Gauteng will need to come on its own. Perhaps it will have some room somewhere along the line. But as of now, the arrangement is that by Friday, all the final mandates be in. Am I right this time? Not final negotiating, huh? Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
Can we get copies of the mandates on Monday so that the department can respond if there's any
issues? Do we have some lunch, no?
There is some lunch.
Oh. Announcements are many. I only made two. There is one more. There is some lunch for us. So before we go, let's have a bite. Thank you.
I hope you are not pretty blue.
No, I'm not that worried.
I just got to Marit.
Who?
Marit is from Prefect.
Ah, from Prefect, yeah.
She thinks we are proposing some changes to or amendments to the bill. Would that help?
Yeah, there are some issues that we have suggested.
But that need to be sent to the provinces.
Huh?
Yes, so that otherwise they're going to be...
Just a second.